Welcome to Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated.
And welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I am the DJ, and with me today I have the Professor.
Hello.
And our evergreen friend, BPM.
What's up?
How have you guys been?
Busy, but going on leave soon.
Ooh, nice. Nice. How about you, Professor?
I'm enjoying the anger over the new Doctor Who season that's just been announced to come out on the 11th of May.
Oh!
Because they've moved the airing time in the UK to midnight, and the a lot of very salty UK fans about that.
Oh. What's this?
So Doctor Who has traditionally aired at about 7 p.m, I think, in the UK. And now they've decided that it's on Disney Plus, they're going to simultaneously release it at midnight in the UK. And Jesus. That puts it at a reasonable time for the US.
Of course. Have to support the US. What about Australia? Yep.
Well, that would mean it would come out at about 10 a.m. for us, so better than we've had.
Yeah.
But it still feels like a bit of a kick in the teeth for the UK.
It is. Like 12 o'clock. That's
like way past your bedtime.
Well, not really. Depending on the person.
Yeah. Like Doctor Who is, if I recall, like it was always a family show. So at midnight, it'd just be like, oh, sorry, kids. You can't watch an episode of Doctor Who. Sorry, kids.
Yeah.
And it's the UK that originated it that is still the biggest single country for it, as far as I'm aware.
So stupid.
Like, what?
Disney fucking things up even more.
What's going to be interesting, though, is like, okay, if they're doing this at midnight, there must be some really, really raunchy things going on at Doctor Who for this season. Like,
no.
I think
it's just to make it more convenient for the US.
Ah. Damn it! I was hoping we would see something spicy on that time. Damn it!
Just watch it on iView.
Anyways, let's get the show on the road. Professor, you've got a story about Adult Swim and their gaming.
Warner Brothers, in their infinite wisdom to make nothing, have decided to completely delist all Adult Swim games by the end of April. Because they seem to think they've found an infinite money cheat where if you don't actually release anything, somehow the buffer overflows and you get infinite money, but I don't think it works like that in real life.
No, that's something that only in the Evil Genius game when you play as the German fella that you can turn anything to gold that you have unlimited money.
So does that include the Rick and Morty games as well?
Yes, it does.
Ah,
and the one I'm most disappointed about is probably Rain World, which is a really interesting game about a thing called a slug cat, but it simulates a whole ecosystem.
Okay.
The developers have actually self-published it since then, so hopefully they do actually get to keep control of it. But Adult Swim have said that they aren't going to transfer any of the games back to the developers.
Oh, that's so they basically held the game at ransom.
Yeah, they've said that they just don't have the resources somehow, even though the devs have proven that it would take like 3 clicks to transfer the ownership.
That's really fucked up in terms of how Warner Brothers have taken this step amongst many steps in their infinite wisdom to save money.
Well, they're losing money because they suck at movie production.
Yeah. What's worse about this is the fact that this puts at odds with the audience who were always who are big Adult Swim fans to be like, ah, I wanted to play that game. Now you don't want me to play that game.
Yeah, that's the way of way it goes.
And this also devalues the whole idea of Adult Swim as a brand. Like when you look, when you think of Adult Swim, you would think of like all these like all these series like Samurai Jack, Rick and Morty, to name a few. Now it's like, ah, oh, yeah, we're not take, we're gonna decrease the brand by shutting down the games.
Yeah, I really don't understand what the long term cost is for this. As far as I'm aware, there's no cost for a developer to maintain a game on Steam.
It could just be a whole. It could just be a whole money thing. Like, oh, hey, hey, you're getting rich off us. We helped you create this wonderful game. And now you're not letting us pay it. So screw
only
you.
Only thing I remember from Adult Swim's are the like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Metal Alchemist, and Moondogs. I never watched Rick and Morty.
The one thing that frustrates me, the one thing that's going to be interesting is it's going to let future franchises go, okay, we're going to use this, we want to make this video game as sort of a cash grab kind of thing, but now because of all the studios shutting down game production, maybe making this as a video game might be a bad idea as a cash grab.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Professor?
I'm not sure what you mean.
I mean, as in, like, you know how normally when you have like video game when you have franchises and they say, okay, say Stranger Things, they have a video game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So say if I was the Netflix executive and Netflix is losing a lot of money, I go, okay, we're gonna shut down the Netflix game division, and the so Stranger Things as a cash grab game becomes terminated. So then future franchises, let's say, for example, I want to make Armageddon the game, and I want to make this into a video game as a cash grab. That idea won't happen anymore because the studio that wants to make that TV show is not going to let it happen. It's not going to make that into a cash grab game.
Well, cash grab usually implies something negative about the quality of the game. So I'd hope there are fewer cash grab games around. I'm just disappointed that this fully finished work of art is being delisted and effectively removed from sale. Removed from existence, really, because there's no physical releases for most of these games.
I'm seeing some of the lists. Some say they're on Steam, some on Xbox and PlayStation. Yeah, others, yeah, you're right. There is no other platform. Like for example, Battle Chef Brigade. No supporting platform. It's just Adult Swim.
So in all, the company that is going to lose revenue in games that maybe that are good, which then will put them on a tighter budget to release anything new in relation to their company, right?
I guess. I mean, if anything, maybe Warner Brothers would take all these rights and vault them. Say like, hey, we'll release this on a Christmas special or
re-releases.
Yeah. Or remaster them, like every other sort of game that's been coming out lately.
Yeah, I don't think these games are getting remastered. Although I did read an interesting article recently about the optimum time to release a remaster.
Oh yeah,
let's see if I can pull that up.
Yeah, while the professor was looking for it, did you guys hear about the Star Wars Battlegrounds remaster that came out the other day?
You mean Battlefront? Yeah. Sorry, not Battlegrounds.
Yeah, Battlefront. Yeah, and how that's turned into a shit show.
Nope, and I never played it, and I don't care to.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, it was so bad that the developer released an issue about it. One of the biggest problems was the connectivity issues. With over 9,000 logging into Steam alone to play the game, only to find 364 player servers being available at launch.
I'm surprised for such an old game they're not allowing you to self-host.
Money.
Yeah. And the so this is the statement from their website. It says, at launch, we experienced critical errors with our network infrastructure. The result was high ping, matchmaking errors, crashes, and servers not appearing in the browser. Since launch, we've been working to address these issues and increase network stability, and we will continue our efforts until our network infrastructure is stabilized to prevent further outages. Please continue to report bugs, errors, or unexpected errors.
The usual.
And critics have been strong at 83 out of 100, but Steam reviews are overwhelmingly negative, with 4,000 counted and Reddit boards are packed with complaints.
Oh, dear. Okay. So I found that article. According to a white paper from IDG Consulting and Strategic Game Consulting, the best time to remake a game is between 11 and 20 years after release, and the best time to release a remaster is when the game is less than 5 years old.
Okay, so say your that game, Rainworld. So that came out when? That came out in Windows 2017, for example. So that would mean it will have to come out on, this is on PS4 and Windows, by the way. So that would mean this would be up for a remaster then, wouldn't it?
It would, but that would involve a lot of effort that the devs might not have. And it's a very stylized game as it is, so it doesn't really need one.
Yeah, like, I had a look through it, and it looks like similar to, the Hollow Knight sort of art style.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pixel art.
Yeah.
I'm also looking at its Wikipedia page. Apparently there are some DLC as well, and that's going to be rendered. That might also be an interesting conundrum in terms of, imagine trying to buy the DLC. You get the DLC, but the game shuts down. Like, ah, crap. I can't play the DLC now.
Well, you'll still be able to play it because it's single player. You just won't be able to buy it.
Yeah.
Which is very sad because Rainworld is a really good game. I recommend picking it up before it goes offline.
Yeah. Does it, with these types of news though, does it, does it make you go like, okay, you know what? Game development is not going good this as a career option at this point. Like, screw this. I'm not going to be a game developer anymore if things go this way.
I'm not going to stop, but it does make it a lot harder to get a paid job doing it.
They'll be moving into the free games or the GoFundMe type stuff for
the Kickstarters.
Yeah.
I think indie development is where it's at the moment, considering the massive success of quadruple-A games like Skull and Bones.
Or the what's that other famous game? Oh, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League.
And I saw it advertised like on a bus stop, and I'm like, yeah, no.
I do not understand who came up with those games. Like, what was the point of those games again?
Well, I think the whole Skull and Bones is trying to do a decent pirate, trying to do a pirate game. Pirate games, there's no such thing as a good pirate game anymore.
Oh, no. The only decent pirate game, I will say, it'll be one of the Assassin's Creed games. They had the best pirate games.
What about Sea of Thieves? That one is like the most wishlisted game on PlayStation since they announced that they were coming to PlayStation a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Yeah, it's PlayStation. I'm PC, so.
it's already on PC. It released on PC like 5 years ago. And it's now coming to PlayStation.
That seems to be a slow release. Thought it'd have all gone like simultaneously. Well,
it's a Microsoft first party game. Ah. So it's part of their new strategy to start releasing their games on a PlayStation to get the new gamers.
Okay.
Here's an idea though, like this might be a crazy idea. Could you see all these games that haven't been put on other platforms, could you see them like maybe go into GitHub, for example, and say, okay, hey guys, since this game is shutting down on Adult Swim, you can find us on GitHub? Or
one developer has already done that. They've released their game for free on their website. I'm not sure how that is going to go down legally. Yeah, I can't imagine they ran it by the lawyers.
No, copyright and all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens in that case. But
overall, it's like a death of a worthwhile game, so to speak. A slow death.
Yeah. Well, at least their death is not as painful as the movie industry's death. That was a segue, guys. That was a segue. Oh,
yeah. Where are we?
So you guys saw the Razzies and the Oscars?
I did not watch it. I was working.
Oh, lucky man.
Nobody watches the Oscars anymore. We all just wait for the recap articles the next day.
Although, okay, so we had the Razzies and the Oscars this week. Which one do you want me to go first, the Razzies or the Oscars?
Which one would get more views?
Normally, it's
go
the
for
Oscars.
The Razzies.
Go for the Razzies. Okay, so the Razzies, as you know, for those who are not familiar with the Razzies, it's basically the Oscars for the worst movies of the year. So for this year, the worst picture, we had the nominees of Winnie the Pooh, Bud and Honey, The Exorcist, Believer, Expendables 4, Meg 2, and Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And the winner was Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. So
I don't understand how.
I think it was just the bastardization of Winnie the Pooh. I mean, when people think of Winnie the Pooh, they think of this cute little bear with honey and stuff, and not a rampaging psycho.
Yeah, that's the juxtaposition all of these horror movies are going for at the moment. But I just don't think it's going to work out for most of them.
I mean, there's already a sequel. There's already a sequel. It's coming out 26th of March. So just 10 days from now. Yeah, let's see. The critical response for Blood and Honey is 3%. And some say it was the screenplay that defeated the movie. And some other people have said that this lacked a coherent story, while also noting that the film fulfills its promise of a slasher film based on beloved children's books. So the worst actor was John Voight in this movie, Mercy. Worst actress was Megan Fox. Worst supporting actress, Megan Fox. Stallone got the worst supporting actor. And Blood and Honey got a lot of award, basically won most of the award for the Razzies. The Oscars, on the other hand, that was an interesting sort of affairs in terms of Oppenheimer just destroying everyone.
I heard about that.
So you could say he dropped the bomb on them.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah, so Oppenheimer got the Best Picture, Best Director. This was Nolan's first Oscar as Best Director, so good on him. Cillian Murphy got the Best Actor. Robert Downey Jr. got Best Supporting Actor. That man has got the best redemption story so far.
Oppenheimer.
Robert Downey.
Yeah, he did go through a rough patch.
Yeah.
But he's now one of the most successful actors I'm aware of.
So Oppenheimer won 7 awards. I was hoping it could get more awards, but it got 7. Lord of the Rings, by the way, it has won 11 awards, so that's one hell of a feat.
Oh, it is Lord of the Rings.
There were some interesting moments in the award ceremony. For example, Godzilla won best visual effects award.
Mm.
And the coolest, I don't know whether you guys saw it, but the coolest part when they won the awards, if you see their shoes, the Godzilla visual effects people, they wore Godzilla claws on their heels.
Huh. That's cute.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. What else? Miyazaki won again for his best animated movie. The only movie Barbie has won was the What Was I Made For? That was the only movie Barbie has won.
Yeah.
Sorry, that makes no sense.
What? What do you mean?
The only movie Barbie has won.
Oh, the only award. Sorry. Yes, you can fire me later. Yeah.
Well, I feel for Margot Robbie. She's a damn good actress.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Emma Stone won Best Actress for her portrayal in the movie Poor Things.
Yep. I actually saw Poor Things. It's actually a weird but decent film.
Okay. But that was interesting how Miyazaki's movie won Best Anime, because a lot of people on social media after the awards were going like, I cannot believe it, Miyazaki's movie won over Spider-Man. How could this be?
Oh, Marvel's done its day. Like, it's it fucked up after Endgame.
What I would say, though, with it, with the direction that after this Academy Awards is going to be interesting. So are we going to see more like biographical movies in the near future? Like, can you imagine that for the next few movies, you're going to see Albert Einstein, the movie, or Charles Babbage, the movie, or...
Mozart.
Yeah, Mozart. Yeah, that'd be a good one. Or Chopin.
Well, they go for a true story of a mafia boss. That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting. I mean, some of the... I would love to see, I wonder if they did a Scarface movie. Well, not the Al Pacino.
Years ago.
Not the Al Pacino one, but the Al Capone one.
Maybe.
And what's also
I'm not sure that we'll see a lot of biopics from this. There'll probably be a couple tagging along, but this is an edge case, I think, coming from a massively popular director.
Yeah. Well, you should look into the TV theories about Jeffrey Dahmer on Netflix got pretty big.
Yeah, you're right.
Came with it.
Yeah, but there was a lot of heat from that Netflix drama, if I recall.
Oh yeah, definitely. The excuse they said they were showcasing a very bad serial killer as a hero or something like that.
Oh yeah, when they're glamorizing the hell out of him.
They're glamorizing the serial killer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's known for killing killing a lot of women and doing other things with.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very messed up story. I heard as well, like there was a certain scene in the Dharma series that where one of the witnesses started like screaming at him in the courtroom. Apparently the original family did not see a single thing about that. They were not told about it, that they were going to be replaying that entire scene.
Well, that's bad production there.
Yeah. What's also going to be what's interesting though with Godzilla winning the award is that are we going to see more? Because if I recall, Godzilla -1, the budget for that one was half of a Marvel movie budget.
Yeah.
I saw a great post about that, though, that Oppenheimer and Godzilla -1 mean it's the only time that a movie and its sequel have won an Oscar in the same year.
Oh, that's funny. That's in terms of timing. Oh, now you're making me laugh and cringe at the same time. Thanks a lot, Professor. Thanks a lot, man.
No, but it could be just, it's revitalizing the old TV show of Godzilla, which I used to watch on SBS.
Yeah.
Black and white and all that fun stuff. Because it looked very similar to the way it was originally portrayed, if I can remember correctly. That was
Yeah. And what's going to be interesting is are we going to see like studios like Marvel and stuff go, you know what, they did this with half of a budget and we're wasting our time just putting like $400-500 million in budget and making a movie, like we could do this, let's try this method.
It could be bringing back your practical props, not your 3D stuff anymore, sort of going back to the when you know the good old puppetry and so forth.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because like the Labyrinth and the Dark Crystal were great movie, and they're old.
although for this year's Academy Awards, while the awards were interesting to watch, there was some other stuff that came out. Like for example, John Cena going nude, not really completely nude, but near nude.
I think everyone's seen enough of that. He's a wrestler. They don't wear that much clothing.
And then there was Al Pacino with his blunder on stage. It's where he basically opened the envelope and just revealed the winner without addressing any of the nominees.
Sounds good to me. Nice quick show. Get it over with.
And then you had Ryan Gosling singing I'm Just Ken. what else? Margot Robbie's dress, for example. Oh, Emma Stone and her acceptance speech where she went up to the stage and in the middle of the stage she just went, guys, my dress broke.
Oops.
But yeah, John Cena's entrance, which the funny part was, it was to hand out the Best Costume Award.
Was there a big screen in the background saying, hurry up?
No, I hope not. But yeah, it was a...
Fucking Game Awards.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr.'s award speech was interesting. His was basically go, I would like to thank my terrible childhood and the Academy in that order. I'd like to thank my veterinarian. I mean, my wife, Susan Downey, over there. She found me snarling rescue pet, and you loved me back to life, and that's why I'm here.
Nice.
Aww.
Well, like, Robert Downey Jr. doesn't really speak about most of his past bad behaviors. I remember one interview, he just walked right off the thing and says, we're done, fuck off.
Like I said, that guy had a very good redemption story. I mean, yeah. After Marvel, like, that was a very rough ride. With the as I was saying, with Godzilla Minus One, the acceptance speech for that one, the director Yamazaki said, even then, the possibility of standing on this stage seemed out of reach, and the moment we were nominated, we felt like Rocky Balboa. This is proof everyone has a chance. Yeah, I forgot to tell you, interestingly, Miyazaki didn't show up for his award presentation.
Busy working on the prequel.
Ah, damn. But yeah, I've heard some mixed reports about this year's Oscars. Apparently it's been a flop again, or some say there might have been a bit of a spike in the viewership. So Do you reckon this is going to continue down even with all these awards?
I don't know. Like, it's a big thing, and it's just people being people. You know, as the world famous Taylor Swift says, haters will hate.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think the relevancy of the Oscars is kind of like, with the low viewership and everything. It's you have to say that question every year at this point.
Yeah, well, it depends on what comes out of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Who exactly wants to watch an award show? There's no drama, there's no twists.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are going to see the Oscars and just wait for the news to come out the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, even the moment where, for example, when Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito rocked up and made fun of Michael Keaton when Michael Keaton did the Batman look. Even then, like, people were like, there wasn't much interest in there. Although interesting fact, it was two Batman villains and making fun of Batman,
which is on brand with Batman.
Yep.
But if you go back into the comics, actually every villain in Gotham actually respects Batman.
Yep.
And they hate every other DC hero.
Fair enough.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anyways, shall we get to the next topic?
Yep.
Okay, so for our final topic, Professor, you've got a story about the... chronic stress and how it affects the environment.
Worse than that, it affects your brain. It makes you dumber.
Ugh. Note to self, I should stop going to work if that's the...
Sounds good to me.
Hey, what have we got? What's the story? What's the download on this one?
So the hypothesis is that inflammatory stress impairs decision-making and behavior and is part of the reason why we're unable to deal with climate change and COVID-19.
Well, stress does always have that, flattening effect on people.
See, here's my problem when people say about stress. I hear one group of people say, oh, stress is bad. You need to de-stress. you need to relax and L. And then you got the other end of people that say stress is good. You know, stress is good for you. You need because it shows you it shows how much you can take as a human being. And I'm like, okay, so is the stress good or stress bad? Come on, what's going on, guys? Give me
it's a bit more nuanced than that. Turns out a little bit of stress is good for you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Keeps you I think sort of it's focused.
Hormesis.
I think that's always been an argument about stress.
The interesting thing about this article is that they treat stress as a contagious thing. It's a way, well, it's contagious inflammation. Ooh. Traditionally, inflammation doesn't spread. It's caused by disease, but without catching the disease, you can't get the inflammation.
Yeah, like there's this article by Suma Health, which says good stress is short-term and it inspires and motivates you, focuses your energy and enhances performance. Bad stress, however, does the opposite. So short-term can possibly be a positive thing, but having stress all the time will just screw you over.
I mean, the contagious nature of the stress being contagious, that's, I mean, there is an element to it. Like, let's say, for example, if us three are all working in the same area, let's say in a high-stress environment, I mean, then, yeah, sure, it could be, that could be a thing in terms of it being contagious. Like, let's say us three working in the finance sector, for example, and we're all three are stressing out in terms of getting a good deal or for a merge, in terms of mergers and whatnot. Yeah, sure, it can be contagious. Am I wrong?
Well, no, it's not what the article's describing. What the article describes is that the stress is contagious through the news, negative online comments, and feeling inadequate when viewing social media, which is a whole other thing, that social media just drives you to keep up with the Joneses and is not a good way to view the world because...
No, like the social media, it's well, it's just bad. None of it's like you look on your TikToks, you look at all your Instagrams, all that, and have people doing whatever, and most of them are, from what I... Well, relatively good-looking people on occasion, and so that could lead to people leading sort of to self-doubt and so forth. That self-doubt is lead to depression and so forth, which I don't think really elevates to stress. It's more about your own self-doubt and self-hate type.
You're seeing people's peaks, but not their lows.
Yeah, exactly.
I will confess, I do scroll a lot of like videos on shorts and reels. Yes, okay, and you can curse me for it.
You already have been.
There are some videos where you go, oh, this is cool, like life hacks and cooking videos and making model anime videos. There are some good ones, but yeah, there are some others where you just go like, what the hell are you doing there, buddy?
That type of thing, like the videos and stuff, it mainly affects your teenagers, not so much the older generation. So the older generation, yeah, like I did that when I was younger, I don't care anymore type thing, you know? Well, they've done crazier things than that you see on TikTok. The stories I can tell you is some of my clients. Oh, boy.
That you mentioned it, though, BPM. What's interesting is how, was it the other day, the United States government have decided to ban TikTok?
Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, that's gonna piss off, like, everyone in America.
I mean, to a degree, yeah, it will piss them off. But it will at least make every influencer, every wannabe influencer, and every wannabe smart person on TikTok go, hey,
advice.
It'll make them go, hey, you idiots, why don't you go and touch some grass, actual grass?
No, they'll probably just move to another platform.
Yep, they'll probably go to Instagram.
Oh, they can try, but I think...
Or OnlyFans.
Not OnlyFans. If I recall, Instagram's got more tougher rules than TikTok, if I recall.
Surprise me. It's a huge service.
And what's also interesting with TikTok is the fact that it's the Western TikTok. It's the most, like, degenerate place you will ever see. But if it's like TikTok China, or for example, you see some of the stuff there, you just go, whoa, can you imagine people doing this? Like, it's basically engineering, science videos, kids doing amazing things on the sports. Like, you see that, you don't see that on Western TikTok at all.
Well, that could also lead to the whole buildup of stress on the people who are viewing such stuff.
I have heard that theory, DJ.
What's that?
That in China, they show different things on TikTok. And yeah, it's an interesting theory that TikTok is a whole Chinese psyop.
Well, it's just a stupid conspiracy, in my opinion. I don't use TikTok. I don't, never will.
Yeah, neither do I. I think we're all a bit old for TikTok.
Yeah, way too old.
We're too old.
If I'm going to do anything, I'll be sticking to YouTube. Thank you very much.
I'll stick to YouTube and Instagram. That's it. Like, with social media in general, I agree with you guys there. Like, it's just a snapshot. But then but my interpretation of social media with when the people do the whole snapshot thing, it's more of the envy. Like, you know, like, oh, I wish I had that moment. You know, like, let's say, for example, BPM over here buys a Ferrari and he puts it up on Instagram. It'd be like, there'll be a moment where you go, I wish I was like BPM. I wish I had that moment of buying that Ferrari.
Or I'll just get told to grow up by everyone on the internet. You're just showing off your bullshit, you know.
But I agree with you there, though, Professor. The whole chronic stress thing with social media. It's the whole, it's the jealousy. It's the jealousy that leads to stress, and it leads to, chronic stress. So how does all this affect the planet, though?
No, I think the article is saying due to the chronic stress, people can't handle change, more than usual.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm looking at one of them and say, like, the idea shifts our view of stress as a biological process with the individual. Some of them said, like, an inability to address these and other stresses may propagate a life of self-perversive danger, causing further stress, inflammation, and impaired cognition in the runway positive feedback loop. Although that being said, though, you reckon seeing social media as a concept go down as an might be a way of reducing stress in general? Like, let's say, for example, the UN just goes, hey, you know what? I'm gonna make social media, all social media companies get banned across the world.
I don't think that would work.
No.
No?
I think people would find on illicit social media.
Oh, yeah. Like, these days, people really can't live without the social media anymore. It's sort of become indented into them, you know?
It's like a drug at this point.
Like, even I occasionally scroll through Twitter, so.
You monster! You evil man!
It is!
Yeah, but at least with Twitter, it's not as crazy as like other social medias we can think of besides TikTok, like Tumblr, for example. Oh, boy.
Twitter can get pretty fucked.
Yeah.
All social media can get pretty messed up.
Yes, this is true. Even Facebook get very messed up if you go to the wrong place. Pages.
It's interesting. I'm also reading the article. They said that there is a... they've proposed a mechanism called the central inflammation map. And the idea is that the brain creates its own copy of bodily inflammation. Normally, this inflammation map will allow the brain to manage the inflammation response and promote healing. And the authors suggest that the inflammation map could similarly harm the brain and impair cognition, emotion, and behavior. Well, that's an interesting idea. What do you reckon, Professor?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea. Obviously, they should do more studies to find out whether it's true. If they find out that the damage of stress is actually reducing IQ, it's just another thing in the pile, because we also know that lead exposure reduces IQ.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, we've banned lead in 99% of use cases, except for some reason aircraft engines. So if you live near a small airfield, you've got a much higher lead exposure than most other people.
Like, in the same article from Sleema Health, they say Bad stress can lead to anxiety, confusion, poor concentration, decreased performance.
And then COVID reduces your IQ, so I've got all these effects stacking. So traditionally, IQ has increased by, the average IQ has increased by about 3 points a decade, I think, since they've been measuring it. I wonder if with the increase in stress and COVID, we might see that slow down or reverse for a while.
Might.
Yeah, we might. We might. Well, what's going to be interesting, though, with this, with all this, is someone was, one of the articles that said, this is the dawning new era of precision and personalized therapy that could offer enormous potential. I think that's a good idea. Patient-centered care.
Yeah, it's we're also at a better point in time to deal with any of these issues than we've ever been. So science marches on. We'll see what new treatments come out for dealing with stress and possible IQ damage from COVID.
Yeah. And they've also said here, at a societal level, the author suggests creating calm public spaces and providing education on the norms that keep our society stable and functioning.
Well, we spoke about that a couple of weeks ago, that green space helps prevent depression.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. I wonder if it'd be cool if they combined the studies with that. Yeah.
And you look on the opposite side, if they combine studies about green space, de-stress, and depression, what will happen to our housing dilemma?
Oh, boy. Well, we could, I was going to say we could do like what the Judge Dredd universe is, basically megacities. Build megacities. Although that would be a downside to it in terms of keeping up with the infrastructure and green spaces would be destroyed in the process. It will help. There will be a shitload of stress, though.
True enough.
So, on to our shout-outs for this week. On the 13th of March, 2024, it's the 55th anniversary of the Love Bug, also known as Herbie the Love Bug. It's a 1969 American sports adventure comedy film directed by Robert Stevenson from screenplay of Bill Walsh, Don DeGardi, based on the story Cowboy Girl, good title, by Gordon Budford. The film is the first installment of the Herbie Love series. Oh, Herbie films it. The film follows the adventures of sentient Volkswagen Beetle named Herbie, Herbie's driver Jim Douglas, and Jim's love interest Carol Burnett.
I'm sorry, I could swear you just said Volkswagen Beetle.
I said Beetle.
I know, I'm going to listen to the recording and make sure you actually said Beetle, because I swear you said Beagle.
He did say Beagle.
God damn it! It featured Buddy Hackett as Jim's enlightened, kind-hearted friend Tennessee Steinmetz, character who creates art from used car parts. English actor David Tomlinson plays the villainous Peter Thorndike. Man, these names are so long. God damn it!
Well, it is what 1969.
Dean Jones credited the film's success to the fact that it was the last live-action film produced by Walt Disney Productions under Walt Disney's involvement, released just 2 years after his death in 1966. Although Jones tried to pitch him a serious, straightforward film project concerning the story of the first sports car ever brought to the United States, Walt suggested a different car story for him, which was Car Boy Girl. Story written in 1961 by Gordon Budford. Cowboy Girl, the Magic Vaults, Volksky, the Runaway Wagon, Beetle Bomb, Wonder Beetle, Bug Boom, and Thunder Bug were among the original development titles considered for the film before the title was finalized as The Love Bug. Man, these names were also shit!
Mad Max Beyond Thunderbug.
My God.
Oh, dear God. On March 11, 2024, Paul Alexander, the last man who lived with an iron lung, passed away. He has a very interesting story, if I could the story up there. So he died on Monday at the age of 78. He contracted polio as a boy, which left him paralyzed from the neck down. Unable to breathe on his own, Paul was placed on a metal cylinder known as an iron lung, where he spent the majority of his life. He would later go on to earn 2 university degrees, practice law for 30 years, write a memoir, and in the last few months of his life, become a social media star on TikTok. Yeah. And he got the... and the Guinness Book of Records also wrote a tweet about it saying, Guinness World of Records are saddened to learn the passing of Paul Alexander, the man who spent the longest time inside an iron lung. What does it say here? So with the law degree aspect of it, so at 21, he became the youngest person to graduate Dallas High School without ever physically attending a class. He graduated with almost straight A's. After many repeated rejections for 2 years, he was offered a place at Southern Methodist University in Dallas and later went to law school at the University of Texas in Austin. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, he had his mind still, so that's the main thing.
Yeah. And he even wrote his 155-page memoir with his mouth, which he said, I wrote the book with my mouth and pen and a pencil typing away at a computer. It was the first book I've ever written, and it's the kind of a major thing in my life. The incredible part of it was it took all over the world, all the way from Russia, Belize, and Europe, and now millions of people know my name today. I'm quite fascinated by on how the heck do you live with an iron lung? That must be terrifying.
He probably wrote it in his memoirs.
Well, the idea behind the iron lung was that it was basically a metal box that they put you in, and it was sealed up around your neck, so the box would increase and decrease pressure to force your body to breathe.
It's an uncomfortable way to live, I think.
Yeah. On the 13th of March 2024, it's the 55th anniversary of Apollo 9, returning safely to Earth after testing the lunar module. This was the third human spaceflight in NASA's Apollo program. Flown in low Earth orbit, it was the second crew Apollo mission that the United States launched via a Saturn V rocket, and it was the first flight of the full Apollo spacecraft, the command and service module with the lunar module. This was flown to qualify the lunar module for lunar orbit operations in preparation for the first moon landing by demonstrating its descent and ascent propulsions, knowing that its crew could fly independently. It was a three-man crew consisting of James McDivitt, pilot David Scott, and lunar module pilot Rusty. I'm not going to even pronounce that last name. It was a 10-day mission. It tested the systems and procedures critical to landing on the moon, including the lunar engines, the backpack life support system, navigation system, and docking maneuvers.
Well, it lasted longer than SpaceX Starship.
Oh, don't get me started on that one. That was crazy.
Talking about the launch last night?
Yeah, disintegrated on re-entry, I think.
Oh, dear. That's sort of the plan, but yeah, it's always sad to see the rocket blow up.
That's even... on the third test flight as well.
Oh, nasty. Just got the stuff here. So following the success of Apollo 9, NASA did not conduct the E mission, further testing in the medium Earth orbit, and considered skipping the F mission, the dress rehearsal for the lunar landing, and going straight to the landing attempt. As the spacecraft designed for the first landing attempt was still being assembled, this was not done. Officials also gave the past difficulties with lunar modules and the need for the test flights. According to French and Burgess in the study of the Apollo program, Apollo 9's success had ensured the next Apollo mission would go back to the moon. And for our messed up moments in nerddom number 7, you picked an interesting one, Professor.
I've picked the Stanford Prison Experiment, which was a planned two-week experiment where some average people would be locked in a fake prison, some assigned to be guards and some assigned to be prisoners, but was cancelled after just 6 days when it turned out the guards became increasingly brutal and began physically and psychologically abusing the prisoners.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay, when you say brutal, how brutal are we saying here? Like, are we saying, like, they just bash their skulls and with the batons and just kick them?
No, I did some research on this with my law degree that I did. From what I can remember, is more about sort of degrading they're treated not as human. They were just treated as, well, just nothings. I think some of them, they were stripped and sort of ran through the aisle, run through the halls of the cells. There was beatings, was one of them. There was forms of torture, both physical and psychological. And also sort of looked into how group dichotomy sort of created. We had the us versus them type of thing. It was the prisoners versus the guards whole thing. And it just got worse and worse as the experiment went on.
So what's the messed up part in this entire experiment from your point
Everything?
Of view? Everything. I'm seeing a line here that says that participants were recruited from the local community with an ad on the paper offering $15 a day, which is $108 in 2002 standards.
Totally not worth it.
Oh, really? No.
Not worth $100 a day to be left with permanent psychological scars.
Yeah, I think some of them suffered. There was sort of suicides, thoughts of suicide. I think there was also a discussion about a coup from the prisoners and the guards. So the prisoners were going to stealing cutlery and stuff. They're going to sort of get into a bloodbath in there, and that's when it all got cancelled after stuff like that. Yeah, it's just a bad experiment, but you also learned quite a lot from that bad experiment.
So some were saying they described the study as unscientific and fraudulent. In particular, Thibault Letexia had established that the guards were directly asked to behave in certain ways to support Zimbardo's conclusions, which were written in advance of the experiment. However, Letexia's article has been criticized by Zimbardo for focusing mostly on ad hominem attacks and ignoring available data that contradicts his counter-arguments. Wait, what?
Because the whole thing was, the original methodology behind it was what the psychological effects were becoming a prisoner or a prisoner guard to do this. They would decide to simulate a prison and carefully note the effects of the institution on the behavior of all those with its walls. And it was fun, and it was supposed to be understand antisocial behavior. And it was surprisingly funded by the U.S. Office of Naval Research.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, the U.S. military has funded a lot of questionable research.
This is true.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right now. It was funded by the Naval Research to study antisocial behavior, and the U.S. Navy and the United States Marine Corps wanted to investigate conflict between military guards and prisoners.
Yeah, you can look at the situation of that American prison where they put the war criminals in.
Guantanamo?
Yeah, no, it's one further out.
Camp X? I
can't remember what it started with. What the fuck was it? Can't remember its name. But it had similar situation as the prison experiment. People were pretty much tortured by the guards because they were terrorists and war criminals against America.
Oh, if I'm getting it right, it could be Abu Ghraib. Is that the one?
Yeah, Abu Ghraib. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, man. Abu Ghraib was terrifying, man.
Yep. Well, that was similar to what happened in the prison experience.
Jeez.
But worse, because it wasn't actually an actual prison. Human rights were completely disregarded.
I mean, we could talk on and on about this experiment, but let's move on to our wacky movie. And on the 13th of March, 1952, The Howling premiered. So on this day in 1981, sorry, it was the wrong date, my bad. The good people of New York City, New York, were treated to a theatrical premiere of The Howling. Directed by Joe Dante, the horror/thriller starred Dee Wallace, Patrick McNee, and Dennis Dugan. According to IMDb, here is the summary. After a bizarre and nearly deadly encounter with a serial killer, a television newswoman is sent to a remote mountain resort whose residents may not be what they seem. This movie scored a big trophy win in the category of Best Horror Film from the 1981 Saturn Awards. And here are some interesting facts about this. This was created by theater chain owner turned producer Stephen Lane, who wanted to get the film going because he was an avid fan of Stephen King. A blurb from King on the cover of The Howling drew Lane's attention on the book and eventually the prospect of buying the rights to make a film of the adaptation. After tracking down the rights to Warner Bros., who had nothing to do with them in the 2 years since acquiring them, had resold the rights to Jack Conrad. Lane partnered with Conrad on The Howling, with the two getting the film set up at Avco Embassy Pictures. The Howling was notable for special effects, which was state-of-the-art at the time. The transformation scenes were created by Rob Bottin, who also worked with Dante on Piranha. Rick Baker was the original effects artist for the film, but left the production to work on An American Werewolf in London, which released the same year as The Howling, handing over the effects work to Bottin. Bottin's most celebrated effect was the on-screen transformation of Eddie Quinst, which involved air bladders under latex facial applications to give the illusion of transformation. Variety claimed that The Howling's biggest flaw is the impact of this initial transformation is never topped during the climax of the film. The film also featured stop-motion animation and puppetry intended to give the werewolves even more human look. Despite most of the special effects, the silhouette of two characters having sex as werewolves is obviously a cartoon animation. This was done because of budgetary reasons. Hey, have you ever seen two werewolves having sex, guys?
Well, this one time I was camping, but apart from that, no.
I'm not gonna even ask for the finer details about this. According to Scott Tobias, the film played a pivotal role in modernizing classic movie monsters, particularly werewolves, by incorporating graphic practical effects and explicit sexuality while interweaving references to the film's context. It also loosely references the Jonestown incident, as the lead character Karen retreated to a forest community known as The Colony. See, the whole modernizing classic movie monsters, yeah, I mean, we're doing that now. Like, we're doing it again.
No, I'm more about that they were representing the Jonestown cult massacre.
What else? According to director Joe Dante, who has been very critical of the book that the movie is based on, he did many interviews talking about how the book wasn't much good and how they improved on it in this movie. One day at the Hollywood Scriptwriting Institute for a lecture, Dante started talking and bad-mouthing the book. A man raised his hand from the audience and said, "So you don't like the book, huh?" And Dante answered, "Well, no, not really." To which the man in the audience replied, "Because I wrote that book." The man in the audience was none other than Gary Bradner, the man who wrote the book. Dante was caught by the author on television. Oh shit.
I wonder how many times that happened before the author decided to stake him out and bring it up.
I also forgot to mention the other theme for the movie. According to the New York Times, The Howling introduced themes of indulgence of primal animalistic desires, particularly focusing on sexual aspects of werewolves. It also offers a satirical comedy on television and the media with its sensationalistic approach, focusing on the personalities like Dr. George Wagner. The film also critiques how television sensationalizes violence and focuses on darker aspects of human nature. Don't we already see that now in modern movies?
Yep.
I mean, I'm also with you, Professor. I do. It would be funny though. Imagine if the author, in hindsight, goes, "Man, I cannot believe it. They made a movie similar to what my themes were."
I wonder what the author's actual opinion of the movie was.
Well, I think I was going to Google that. What's his name? Gary Bradner.
Yep, Gary Bradner. Well, that's what do you reckon about that idea though? Like exploring the indulgence of primal animalistic desires and adding sexual aspects to werewolves.
Let's see. I'm gonna go into Reddit, see what it has to.
Ah, good old Reddit.
No, that's just people complaining.
I bet you he would say it was a pretty shit movie. I don't want to watch it ever again.
Nah, it doesn't seem to pop it up.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Oh well.
So, what have you guys got planned for the rest of the week ahead?
Nothing.
Nah.
Though I have been stuck into playing a lot of Hell World game.
Helldivers.
No, Power World.
Oh, Power World. Oh, yeah. Shit. That game's still a thing.
Yes, it is still a thing.
I'm surprised it's still surviving. Yeah.
They just released a big content update.
Yeah, it's a huge content update. It's one of the still going strong.
Nice. I need to get back. I need to start playing Power World, damn it. What about you, Professor? What are you doing for this?
Probably just going into hibernation until next week.
Oh, you're not going to say anything else other than the fact that you saw June 2? Nothing else?
Well, I've seen that, and I've got nothing to look forward to.
Ah, nuts.
I haven't seen the second movie yet. I've only seen the first one.
I haven't seen the
book. It's good.
Does it live up to the books?
I'd say it does.
Yeah, I know the first movie did, and I was more than about the second one. I think it's a trilogy, wasn't it? The books, I don't remember.
Well, there's six books.
Yeah.
They're making a trilogy of movies based on the first two.
I see.
I've been seeing some interesting discourse about that movie, like how someone was trying to compare Lord of the Rings to Dune.
No, they're completely different genres.
Oh, they are completely different genres, true, but then they both have the same, like, tones in terms of, like, what was that? There was that one tweet I saw where they both had the same similar religious tones, essentially.
I didn't pick anything religious in the first film or the book, but... People will be people.
Yeah.
Just the sci-fi adventure type thing.
Yeah, which makes sense. That makes sense. Anyways, that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, Professor?
Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Check out our shorts, as in short videos, not our clothing.
No TikTok, because you might get banned. In the spies.
You can also find us on thats.canon.com, where we're in the archive of our old episodes. You can find us on Twitter as well. We don't really post any comments there, although we do post some stuff. Anyways, stay happy, stay nerdy. See you guys.
See y'all.
Look after yourselves and stay hydrated, and we'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.